intersection between federally protected student privacy and the public's right of access to government records is a constant source of tension and frustration for journalists. A recent ruling by a Florida appeals court provides some daylight and some encouragement for journalists seeking access to essential records from public colleges and universities. And our guest on the SPLC podcast will talk about winning that victory for a scrappy online news service run by students at the University of Central Florida. I'm Frank Lamonti, Executive Director of the Student Press Law Center. The SPLC is an advocate for the rights of journalists to publish and gather news free from censorship. We help journalists get access to the essential records, documents, and meetings that they need to do their jobs. We're online at splc.org and happy to take your questions by email, splc@splc.org. Our guest today is Justin Hemlip. Justin is an attorney based out of Tampa. He has his own law firm there. He's a former journalist, having been an editor at the University of Florida student newspaper during his undergraduate years. He's a 2008 graduate of the Florida State University College of Law, and he's been actively representing the nightnews.com news service at the University of Central Florida in Orlando, where student journalists have been using public records laws to try to hold their administration, and in particular, their student government association, accountable. UCF has fiercely fought back against these public records requests, often falling back on federally protected student privacy, i.e. FERPA, the Family Educational Rights and Privacy Act, which serves as a partial override to state open government laws. So Justin Hemlip, thanks so much for being here on the podcast. And first of all, just to start out, if you would introduce Night News and how you got involved with them.
Oh, Frank, good afternoon. Thanks for having me. It's a pleasure. My client, Night News, they're, like you said, they're a scrappy online news service. They're independent from the University of Central Florida. They're a 501c3 nonprofit, and they publish only online. They do publish both in print and in video, and they tend to be very aggressive when it comes to asserting the public's right to know and to hold their government accountable. Well, I was going to say, I got involved with Night News, I believe it was back in 2012 when they approached me about some issues they were having with a couple of discrete records. And as we were building a case against the university, more and more violations of the public records law and the Sunshine Law continued to pile up. After a considerable time of preparing the lawsuit, we ended up filing a sprawling complaint against the university alleging, 13 different violations of the Sunshine Law and the Public Records Act in Florida concerning 10 different incidents. About half of them involved the student government, and the rest of them involved basically hazing accusations against student organizations like fraternities and sororities. I believe in this case they were just fraternities.
Right. So these records that Night News was after sort of broadly clustered around two subjects. One subject was the regulation and oversight of the Greek system and what transpired when these Greek houses were accused of hazing or other student conduct violations. That was one bundle of records. The other bundle of records involved the internal governance and ethics of the Student Government Association, the honesty of the election process, and so forth. And in both cases, the university came back citing FERPA, the Federal Student Privacy Act, as the basis for denying either entirely or in substantial part these requests. I gather that Night News got back some subset of records, but that a significant amount of the information that the journalists needed was redacted.
That's exactly right. When it comes to the student government records, there were a couple different classes of records. The first were student government discipline records. So in one instance, there was an individual, I can't recall their position, I think it was the Speaker of the Student Senate, who was facing impeachment accusations, they were facing impeachment because of the various accusations. And there was another set involving what they call the Election Commission. So basically, campaign violations and things like that. The other was regarding the student government budget process, by which the Student Government Association is what they refer to at UCF, spends the public funds paid by students in what's called the activity and service fee for the benefit of the students. So, you know, the chess club and the student union and that kind of thing is paid for with these public funds. And what the university had done with these records is basically marked out all of the names. So when it comes to the impeachment record, everybody knew who the Speaker of the Student Senate was. Everybody knew who else, if there was anybody else being impeached, everybody knew who they were because they were elected. They campaigned for these offices. Their names were on the ballot. And then thereafter, the university decided, well, hey, because they were being disciplined by the student government, that's covered by FERPA. And similarly, when it comes to the budget document, and this is almost the university marked out of a cover page of what's called a budget request, which is how, say, the chess club or whatever asked the student government, hey, can you allocate us some money for this year? And they marked out one student's name because I guess that student purportedly opted out of the disclosure of their directory information under FERPA. And once again, that individual, we all knew who they were. The identity and their title was well known, but the university decided nonetheless that they were entitled to and in fact must mark out the name of that student. And, you know, the university hasn't said this explicitly, but my opinion on their position is that any scrap of paper that happens to be laying under a bench on campus at the University of Central Florida that has a student's name on it is a FERPA-protected record, and Knight News simply disagrees.
Well, we should emphasize that FERPA was intended to cover what are called education records. That's the phrase right out of the statute. And a common sense understanding of that would cover attendance records, grades, test scores, disciplinary records, and minor offenses. Those kinds of things that everybody understands to be educational and that would be stored in a centralized file with the student's name on it. It's really hard to argue that Congress could have had student government records in mind at all when they enacted FERPA, in part because the student government is actually free to destroy those at any time. They're not under any obligation to place those in a centralized file with the name of any particular student on them. So under the prevailing understanding of FERPA and the way that the Supreme Court has defined it, this should be a fairly easy case to resolve. But it hasn't been. It's actually been kind of a roller coaster ride through the courts that only recently seems to have concluded. So I guess walk us through the ride that you've been on, Justin. How has this been resolved by the courts in terms of the journalist's right of access?
Well, you're right. It has been a roller coaster. I think the term we've been using is it's like fighting in Stalingrad from boulder to boulder and ruin to ruin over every conceivable issue that UCF's attorneys could raise. And, you know, to be candid, it has taken too long. These records were produced and disclosed in a redacted manner in 2011 and 2012, and here it is, the middle of 2016, and we finally have a ruling that might end the case. So we still don't even know. The university has blanketly applied FERPA to all of these records and has been successful to date in doing so. They were able to persuade the court that all of these student government records and all of these other records that have nothing to do with the individual's grades, attendance, test scores, psychological evaluations, and whatnot are somehow education records and thereby covered by FERPA. But as you stated, the Supreme Court in the Owosso case, you know, interpreted the language of the statute directly related to a student. And second, are they maintained by the university? Well, in the first instance, we've taken the position that these records are directly related to government officials who are elected pursuant to state statute. The universities in Florida do not create their own student government. The Florida legislature creates the student government, and that's different than in other states. So, for instance, in Alabama, I believe, the universities create the student governments, and they can just wipe them out if they so choose. Here, the student governments exercise authority that's delegated by the legislature. The legislature says, hey, you guys are the students at the university. You have elected your representatives to decide how to spend the activity and service fee money. And so, therefore, all of these records and all these issues are, quote, maintained by the student government. And that's the second prong under FERPA. is who are they maintained by? And here they're maintained by the Student Government Association, which in all candor is, quote, a part of the university according to the statute in Florida, but they are granted a wide independence, a very broad independence in their actions, and the university can't simply override the decisions of student government. And so because of that, we've been taking the position, and I think we finally found a limited window of success here, that these records that are created, generated, and maintained by student government officials, whether they be elected or appointed, are not education records at all. And so therefore, you don't even have to look to FERPA to find out whether there's an exception or not. And what the Fifth District Court of Appeal recently did, well, first we lost there. We lost at the trial court, and then we lost at the Fifth District. Then we moved for a rehearing, basically asking the court to give us a second chance. And in that most recent ruling, the court found that there is an implicit waiver of any privacy protections that may be afforded by FERPA by individuals that participate in student government. Now, the court's ruling was puzzlingly focused mainly on the discipline records. That's the impeachment stuff and the election commission stuff that I mentioned earlier. But nonetheless, should be applicable to everything, including the budget documents and all that. And what we have done is there's actually two additional lawsuits that have been filed subsequently against the University of Central Florida, and they're still pending as well. The first is involving the election commission specifically. Basically, an individual, a student senator named Jacob Millick, was alleged to have committed some campaign violation or another and faced discipline in the election commission. And the university closed the election commission meetings to the public, and that had never been done before. And they did so citing the Fifth District's original opinion in this case. They also withheld records about the election commission. I don't recall whether that's involved in our second lawsuit or not. In the third lawsuit, which is also still pending and at a much more early stage, involves the budgetary process. And so what UCS has done is when they allocate the ANSB money, the student government, they have what's called an ANSB committee. And that's comprised of both individuals appointed by the student government president, that's half of the committee, and the other half of the committee are some UCS staffers or administrators or something like that. They're not students. What they're doing is that they're holding these meetings when school is not in session. So the decision of when or how to spend this money, how to allocate these funds, are basically made in committee and rubber stamped at the Senate later, the Student Senate. But they're happening when there's no students on campus. So the constituency that's directly impacted by the decisions that are made by this committee, they're not there. They would have to get a hotel room or stay with a friend in Orlando or something like that in order to participate as a member of the public, come and observe or make public comment at these meetings. And under Florida law, it's our position that that's illegal. And so we've raised that issue with the court, as well as some others involving the budgetary process.
So one of the issues that that gets tricky when you're talking about gaining access to records from student government associations or gaining access to meetings of student government associations is whether we're really talking about a state agency that's covered by these sunshine laws or not. And in fact, I gather that the state has been attempting to argue that student government associations aren't government agencies at all, that they're more equivalent to some kind of a club where students just get together to do social things, and they're not doing governmental business in such a way as to bring them within the umbrella of the Sunshine Law. Can you talk about that?
It's a very creative argument, and it showed up in another case that maybe we'll have a chance to talk about as well. What they've said, and they've suggested it in one of our three cases as well, is exactly what you said. Student government is, quote, not real. They call it student mock government. They call it a training program for democracy or a learning laboratory for democracy. There's a couple problems with that. First of all, it's just wrong. These student governments, at least in the state of Florida, they're exercising authority delegated by the legislature. The legislature has empowered these student government, created these student governments, and then empowered them to spend public funds in the way that they see fit. And then the other important point is, let's pretend that they were just a club. It still doesn't matter, because in that instance, they're operating under the auspices of the university, and the university itself is subject to these public records and sunshine laws. So in either instance, it's a creative argument, but it doesn't hold water. And the other case that I was mentioning is actually not a public records case at all. What happened there, and I'm not, or my client is not a party to that case, but we did file along with for a variety of individuals and entities that are either current or former student government officers at many schools, or reporters who do or have covered student government at their schools. The universities filed an amicus brief in support of the Florida A&M University, and that's in Tallahassee, in a case filed by a candidate for the student body presidency. And he alleged some irregularities in the election process, and he challenged those in court. And my client and the friends of the court, the amici that we filed on behalf of, don't really take a position on whether or not he should win the case. The reason we jumped in is because the university said exactly what you suggested, that they came in and said, well, okay, the student government's just a club, so it doesn't create any rights. You can't sue over this stuff. And what we thought it was, to be candid, was a sneaky attempt to get a ruling from the first district that they could then turn around and use in the fifth district to combat the public records and sunshine lawsuits. And it's to my knowledge, that case has not yet been resolved.
Right. It is a creative argument, but it does seem like it collapses onto itself when you look at the positions that UCF has advanced previously in your case. If indeed this is nothing more than a student club, a social organization of students getting together just to hang out and practice being government officials, then it can't be the case that what they're creating are education records, right? An education record is something that's created and maintained by the institution pertaining to that person's enrollment as a student, and certainly nothing that was created by any other student club would qualify as a FERPA record. If the ultimate Frisbee club gets together and writes up a roster of the teams or divvies up who's going to pay for the beer and pizza that night, certainly none of the documents that they create is a FERPA education record. So it seems like that argument caves in on itself, close examination.
I would wholly agree with that. In fact, as an example, we, in our Knight News' third lawsuit about the budget record, we actually finally did get production of some of these records after we filed the lawsuit, but they still redacted from those records. Well, I mean, we don't know what's behind those black marks, right? But it looks like they're the names of the individuals who are named as vendors in these budget documents, and then some comments in those documents that presumably also name individuals. And we're taking the position, and I think it's the correct one, that this has nothing to do with anybody's test scores or anything like that. And even the United States Supreme Court, in the only leading case that has actually interpreted what exactly is a FERPA record that's binding on everyone in the nation, the Owosso case, they said that elementary school students grading each other's tests in a classroom are not education records covered by FERPA. So if that's the case, how could it be that the student government president taking a plane trip to Washington, D.C. to lobby for something, how is that an education record? How is it an education record that somebody's being reimbursed for the pizza they bought for some club or whatever it is that's in there? It to be perfectly candid, it's ridiculous and frustrating, but we nonetheless have to go through the process.
Yeah. In the few minutes that we have left, because you mentioned the recent ruling that actually ended in Knight News' favor, just talk about that very briefly. The court actually did come back upon rehearing and ordered disclosure of some subset of the records, and they had a really important waiver theory there. They relied upon the idea that when you embark upon a student government position, you implicitly waive some of your privacy. So talk about that, if you would.
That's exactly what the court said, and I believe that there's some contradictory Department of Education guidance on implicit waiver as well. In fact, Knight News didn't actually make the argument about implicit waiver. That was a creation of the court itself. At least in the case of the University of Central Florida, individuals that declare their candidacy, I guess is the way to say it, they have to sign an oath, and in that oath, they swear to uphold and abide by the Florida statutes and the Florida Constitution, which are very clear about the public records law. So we actually made the argument that it's an express waiver, that if there is any protection at all under FERPA, that they expressly waived it by signing this waiver. But I do believe that the court is right, that just, you know, it doesn't make sense that you can put your name on T-shirts and put your name on signs and hang them up all over campus and run for office, and then your name is on a ballot, and then you get voted into office, you win the election, and thereafter your identity becomes a secret, and then all of a sudden you can spend the public's money in secrecy. It's really a preposterous idea that runs completely contrary to generations of case law in the state of Florida and probably other states that say that, you know, the allocation and expenditure of public funds cannot be done under the guise of secrecy. Student government isn't the Pentagon. They're not building B-52 bombers. There's no justification for redacting these individuals' names from the public record. And so I think the court maybe split the baby, but they came up with a result that I think is going to be valuable across the country. This is the first case that I know of where the interplay between FERPA on the one hand and student government on the other has been adjudicated. And so hopefully we've created a precedent here that'll be valuable moving forward for student journalists across the country.
Well, we have to leave it there, but I want to thank Justin Hemlep, attorney in Tampa, Florida, for being our guest on the SPLC podcast and for your really valuable legal work on behalf of Knight News and government transparency in Florida. There are copies of the Knight News rulings available online on the SPLC.org website. We, of course, also encourage you to check out KnightNews.com to read the enterprising work of these vigilant young journalists. If you have any question at all about your entitlement to public records or about the interplay of FERPA privacy and openness in government, get in touch with us at the Student Press Law Center. We're online at splc.org. We're on Twitter at splc, and we'd love to hear from you. Our hotline is 202-785-5450. Thanks for listening, and we'll talk to you next month.